Hey, welcome along. It is 4 p.m. Eastern Time in North America. That's 5 p.m. in the Canadian Maritimes, 5:30 p.m. in Labrador, where Tucker Carlson likes to go fishing. That means it's 9 p.m. in the British Isles, 10 p.m. in Western Europe, 11 p.m. in Moscow, 12:30 in Tehran, for those of you who dig the half-hour time zones, and ungodly hours of Saturday morning in Asia and the Pacific. But wherever you are, welcome along. We are live around the planet. You don't have to be a member of the Mark Steyn Club to listen to this show, but you do to ask a question. So if you're in the mood to ask a question, you can sign up now and I'll be glad to answer it. We have some breaking news in the last few minutes. Felicity Huffman, the actress, has been sentenced to 14 days. That's a fortnight, as nobody says in the United States. She's been sentenced to a fortnight in prison for her part in this fraud, alleged fraud upon American colleges in faking your kids. In her case, it was faking her daughter's SAT mathematics score in order for her to qualify to go to university and become a theater major. She was worried that because of the bad math scores, her excellent acting ability would be impeded by not being able to do an acting course at university and therefore not getting auditions. I found the last couple of hours of bleating before the judge one of the most repulsive parts of federal judicial procedures. But the idea is that this all makes it likely that Lori Loughlin, who has had the temerity not to cut a deal, not to cop a plea, and is actually insisting on her right to a trial by a jury of her peers, will be looking at whatever it is, 6 to 8 years in the slammer, because her sins were far greater, allegedly, than Miss Huffman. I mean, these are sort of semi-famous. Nobody's really famous anymore, with a very few exceptions. But Felicity Huffman and her husband, William H. Macy, you'd know their, even if you don't know the names, you'd recognize their faces from various motion pictures and television things. But what I like about this is the alleged victim in this crime are supposedly the colleges who've had to take people that they otherwise wouldn't have taken. The entire American higher education system is utterly grotesque and corrupt. We've talked before about some of these college loan corporations under which people become billionaires, lending money to people living in trailers and one-room apartments to go to colleges and get degrees that aren't worth having. And in actual fact, it's absolutely absurd that the basis of this crime, by the way, is that the victims are the victim of the fraud is the alleged college that took someone it otherwise wouldn't have taken. In that case, why not prosecute Elizabeth Warren, for example, for claiming to be a woman of color to get into Harvard Law School, and in fact allowing Harvard Law School to promote her and tout her as a woman of color for decades, as their first woman of color. Presumably there is an actual Cherokee or some other actual woman of color, as opposed to a 1,023 out of 1,024th all-white person out there in America somewhere who actually should have been Harvard Law School's first legitimate woman of color. But nobody cares about her. So I find this very odd, because Harvard Law School, you're sitting across the desk from Elizabeth Warren, you know she's 100% white, you know she's not a woman of color. But you go along with it. And what I think, one thing that needs to be done, it's just a quick comment on this Felicity Huffman thing. Right now, there is no market control over the cost of a worthless American university education, so that the loans you've, because the loans are essentially taken over by the government now, the loans, the cost of college courses is basically inflated by the government interference in the market. So we're now people are, what was once 30,000 becomes 50,000, 50,000 becomes 70,000, 70,000 becomes 100,000. There's no end to it. It's accelerating way beyond inflation and way beyond any benefit you derive from taking these stupid non-academic academy courses. So actually, I would be in favor of getting the colleges in the game as the direct lenders, and they and one advantage of that would be that the prices set for these courses would actually come down far closer to what they actually are. Anyway, if you want to ask a question about that Felicity Huffman, 14 days in the slammer. 14 days in the slammer. And the idea is it's to enable them to threaten Lori Loughlin with 10 to 40 years in the slammer so that she'll cave. Because, and again, this is an important point to bear in mind. The federal justice system is inherently corrupt. It wins 97% of its cases without taking them to court because it makes the cost of fighting in court, the cost of arguing for facing your accuser on an open day in court before a jury of your peers, too expensive. The idea being that in getting 14 days in the slammer Felicity Huffman, they can now put the squeeze on Lori Loughlin to fold like a cheap suit before the feds. And we will see whether that happens. But to be honest, I think everything involved in the Department of Justice, the Federal Prosecution Service, the dirty, rotten, stinking, corrupt guys who run the FBI, the stupid, inept boobs slash and or co-conspirators who facilitate the suicide of the most high-value prisoner in the United States, Jeffrey Epstein. The Department of Justice should be broken up and taken to pieces and rebuilt again in various separate institutions so it's not a total stinking corrupt hellhole where justice goes to die. On that thought, let's go to Brian from Minneapolis. Brian writes, "Dear Mark, the war on free speech and words gets worse and worse. From the refusal to acknowledge Islamic terrorism in the United States on 9/11 and in the UK to being punished for bringing up mass immigration, the left has gone Orwell on the term all are welcome when it comes to people's views and beliefs in these matters. In other words, all are welcome, but some are more welcome than others. Tell me if I'm wrong on this or am I just scratching the surface? Thanks." No, we are in very difficult times for free speech in the free world. Tony Blair, it's hard to imagine now because he was like a rock star. He was a phenomenon. If you read Robert Harris's novel, Robert Harris is a lefty who wrote a novel called The Ghost about a guy who gets signed as ghostwriter to a thinly disguised Tony Blair-type prime minister. And I don't want to give away the end, but it doesn't work out well for Tony Blair, the Tony Blair figure, which tells you how much champagne socialists like Robert Harris came to despise and loathe Blair. And I knew Blair a little, in the 90s. I've spoken before about how I loaned him my necktie for a critical television appearance. But what his foundation has just done is absolutely disgraceful. He's called for five anti-immigrant parties or activist groups in Britain to lose their free speech rights because he happens to disagree with them. They don't support violence. They've done nothing violent. They're just people who want to stand in elections, get elected to local councils and so forth. And because he happens to disagree with them on immigration issues and especially with Islamic immigration, he now feels Tony Blair now feels that they should lose their free speech rights. This kind of talk is becoming more and more normal. And the reason it is, what's Orwellian about it is that essentially the entire global political class in the developed world decided to take a flyer on multiculturalism starting more or less half a century ago, 40 years ago, but accelerating dramatically in the last 25 years. It's a huge flyer on the future. Even if you think it's a grand idea, it's a grand gamble. It's a grand gamble. And as it becomes clearer and clearer that for many countries, such as Sweden, the gamble is not working out at all, the political leaders will become more and more invested in the big in the big lie and propping up the official narrative and preventing you, as much as the Soviet Union ever did, in pointing out the obvious. Thank you for that, Brian. Richard Malaby writes, "Hi, Mark. Love the club. Kudos to the Stein Online crew for adding Laura's Links as a weekly feature." That's Laura Rosen-Cohen, who was on the Mark Stein cruise. We just got off it a couple of days ago in Vancouver. We did an Alaska cruise and had a grand old time. The show was rather stolen. I'll just mention this quickly. If you want to ask about a question about the cruise or about next year's cruise, do feel free. But I will just mention this. For our finale, we staged an excerpt from our friend Phelan McAleer and Anne McElhenney's new play called FBI Lovebirds, which has the simplest of premises. They've just taken the actual texts from Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, the FBI paramours, as Trey Gowdy called them, who were at the center of the ludicrous Clinton investigation and then the disgraceful coup attempt, the Trump investigation that they tried to pass off as a Russia investigation. And as always, Anne and Phelim have a bit of a problem finding getting a theater to agree to produce the play. And so we thought we'd give him a hand, and we did an excerpt of it for the finale of the Mark Stein cruise with me as Peter Strzok and Michelle Bachmann as Lisa Page. And I tell you what, you know, W.C. Fields' old injunction about never working with children or animals, because the audience loves them and you're just like an also-ran in between. I would say that also goes... You should never work with children, animals, or Michelle Bachmann, because she is a comedic genius, and she was quite brilliant as Lisa Page, and I did my best to play straight man to her as Peter Strzok. Anyway, Richard Malaby says, a bit off topic, in the flatlands of New Hampshire, the big issue this week was the sexual assault and rape charges against newly acquired Patriots receiver Antonio Brown. As with most things in life, I have no clue what happened. What I do know is that it's amusing to watch members of the media who were so quick to run over Brett Kavanaugh with the Me Too train attempt to delicately pick apart the story from Brown's accuser. What happened to hashtag believe all women? My question is, are we stupid? Pick a topic, any topic. Whenever a sensational story breaks, we run to our phones and keyboards, seemingly in an effort to be incorrect first. Thank you. I think we're in... I've said this before, but I think it's true. I think we're in Lenin country. Who, whom? That's Lenin. Lenin, I believe, was the first to formulate it that way. And it's one of the consequences of identity politics, is that once you know, once you've identified who, whom, you know who is the guy you're meant to support and who is the guy you're going to stick it to. So, for example, with the Me Too thing, as far as Brett Kavanaugh, is a white male judge who happens to be a judicial pick of a president that the left reviles as a racist and an Islamophobe and a sexist and all the rest of it. So therefore, whoever accuses Kavanaugh, however incredible it is, and actually, there was a story, just a sort of foot of the page item in the news the other day, that Christine Blasey Ford's dad had congratulated Brett Kavanaugh's dad on Brett getting confirmed for the Supreme Court. And Christine Blasey Ford's dad said he was glad, told Kavanaugh's dad that he was glad that Brett had been confirmed to the Supreme Court. But it doesn't really matter. The point is, because Brett Kavanaugh is who he is, Christine Blasey Ford can accuse him of being a gang rapist and all the rest of it, and that the left can pile on, do their worst, and all those Democrat senators will say they believe it without any evidence whatsoever because of the identity group Brett Kavanaugh falls into. And that's really all the territory we're mining here now. We find out who the ridiculous thing about likewise with most of these transgender complaints. It's a the transgenders have come along and are the new most fashionable identity group. So if a trans, as we've also seen in Britain, when a transgender objects to being mocked by a lesbian as not being a real woman because the transgender happens to have a penis, then the transgender trumps the lesbian. We're who-whom in Lenin terms, but with a much more sophisticated hierarchy of things. That's what's going on there. Tom Bruck writes, the recent news that Jim Comey would not be subject to prosecution. Well, that's not entirely true, Tom. He won't be subject to prosecution for this one thing about leaking to the media. But it is possible he could be prosecuted for these fake visa applications, joke visa applications, to the Foreign Intelligence Court, which was an abuse of that Foreign Intelligence Court. Because it was, they were basically using it as a tool to backdoor their way into the Trump campaign. In other words, it's straightforward banana republic stuff. The ruling party is using a tool of state to get the goods on its political opponents. The recent news that Jim Comey would not be subject to prosecution has been somewhat tempered by the signs that McCabe may be. The fact remains there is a sense of two tiers of justice in the country. I think it has a highly corrosive effect on the trust we have in our institutions. What is your take on the fact that the connected seem to escape justice? Is the media disinterest when it is their team a significant contributing factor? I think it's more than media disinterest, Tom, because you know, a million things happen every hour of the day, and only a very few of them catch the media's eye. But what's interesting is when stories catch the media's eye, and then they say, okay, yeah, so noted, and they just put it in a shoebox and stick it in the attic and don't go near it. And I mentioned somewhere or other, I think what's interesting to me is the Clintons, for example, had been in public life for a quarter of a century before it became clear that the laws do not apply to them. You're right, by the way. We do not live in a land of laws. We live in a land of men. That actions have consequences only according to who you are. So it's another example of the who-whom phenomenon that I was talking about. The Clintons, in fairness to them, had been in public life, at least in Arkansas, for a quarter century before it became clear that the laws of the United States that would utterly destroy other people do not apply to them. Ilhan Omar comes along. She's been in public life for 20 minutes, and it's already clear that the laws of the United States do not apply to her. There's obviously evidence. Prima facie evidence of immigration fraud. It's not even clear Omar is her real name. Clear that this business, there's enough evidence on this business of the fake marriage to her brother to warrant investigation. There's even investigation as to just from the basis of that brother slash husband's own evidence from his social media posts. But we all know that the stinking corrupt, I hate to keep saying stinking corrupt before I name any federal government agency, but that's what happens when you live in a land of men, not a land of laws. The stinking corrupt federal immigration bureaucracy, the chances of them ever recommending prosecution of Ilhan Omar for immigration fraud are 0%. She's already been moved into the protected category of Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is now doing, as is agreed by all now, her ignoring the government rules on private email use means that foreign intelligence services, we can argue it's now accepted that certain foreign intelligence services were watching her emails in real time, reading her emails in real time. It's actually quite likely that all of them were, allies and enemies alike. And yet, what is she doing? She's at the Venice Biennale, as you saw on Tucker last night, doing shtick, doing comedy routines, mocking her contempt for American law. So we live increasing equality before the law is basically dead at the federal level, at the corrupt, stinking corrupt federal level of justice. It's basically dead. Michael Seth writes, Mark, welcome home. You were spot on with Tucker last night regarding Hillary and her undying lust for relevance. She certainly is waiting for the call to save the Democrats, and I'm not sure I blame her. There wasn't a single person on the Democrat debate stage who looked sane, never mind impressive. I still believe we have yet to hear from whoever the actual peep candidate will be. It won't be Hillary, and Rush has basically ruled out Mrs. Obama. Any theories on a last-minute entry? I have no real idea. I didn't watch it live, but I watched a couple of clips. The highlight of the thing, the 3 hours, because now we're basically congratulating Joe Biden on withstanding the debate if he can get through it without misidentifying the state he's in. So, for example, last night, the most interesting part was when Joe Biden said that black parents made worse mothers and fathers because they didn't keep the record player on all night for the children. That was the actual phrase. Keep the record player on all night. I don't even know what he's talking about there. I know vinyl has come back and some kids regard it as cool. My boy asked me for an original. He asked for an LP of the Sex Pistols album. Never mind the bollocks, here's the Sex Pistols. And wanted me to buy it on Amazon for him for Christmas or whatever it was. And I said, I don't need to do that. It's in the attic. I haven't played it since 3 months after it came out. That's not why Joe Biden said that black people make a more problematic parents because they don't keep the record player on all night. What Joe Biden actually means by that, I don't know. Cory Booker gave a serious interview in which he said that record players were not big in his community. By his community, he doesn't mean people who've gone to Harvard, Yale, and Oxford, which is what Cory Booker actually is. By his community, he means a lot of people who didn't get to go to Harvard, Yale, and Oxford. Anyway, so the idea that this is going to go on, and I'm in favor of Joe Biden staying in the race. We on the Mark Stein cruise for the finale, we did a little song about Joe Biden. It went down so well. I'm hoping he stays in all the way till next November, just so I can take that number out on the road and give it a workout a few more times. But the fact is, you have a weak front runner. So far, what's interesting about this is the age thing. The peril for Joe Biden is it's not going to be an age thing, because the young'uns on that stage last night are a total disaster. They're going nowhere. So it's basically become a geezer race. And Bernie is not on his game. For whatever reason, Bernie isn't talking about black people keeping the record player on all night, but Bernie has not found his groove this time round. And Elizabeth Warren enables you to vote for all Bernie's policies in a somewhat more competent form. Bernie has made actually some, I think, some quite problematic missteps, like when he insisted the Boston Marathon bomber should have the right to vote. I mean, he's gone, Elizabeth Warren knows when to dial it back sufficiently. So we can eliminate all the young people. The young people are zombie candidates. None of them are going anywhere. The one who had who seemed most together, Kamala Harris, has a problem because she was a prosecutor who put all the wrong people in jail. So the most competent of the young'uns isn't going anywhere. All the rest are just joke candidates. Beto and Cory Booker and Bill de Blasio and all the rest are all just joke candidates. So it's a three-geezer race in which the third geezer, Bernie, is beginning to fade. And his main use to Biden didn't want to attack Elizabeth Warren. It's interesting. Biden, the people around Biden made a strategic decision that when Biden wants to attack the nutso left, he goes for Bernie rather than Elizabeth Warren. Because at this stage of the game, it would look mean-spirited to beat up the Cherokee maiden. And he doesn't want to come off, like General Custer. So instead, he beats up Bernie for the same policies that Elizabeth Warren is touting. So it's looking like a Warren-Biden race. And I think you'd have to give it to Elizabeth Warren on that. She's the one who's in it for the long haul. Actually, on that subject, Drew says Elizabeth Warren proposed increasing Social Security payments by $200 a month and tax the rich to pay for it. She said it's time Washington stopped trying to slash Social Security benefits for people who've earned them. More brazen lying about the system. Today's system actually subsidizes lower earners who receive more favorable returns than their contributions would dictate, and higher earners see lower returns. Warren's proposal would move Social Security even closer to a full-blown welfare scheme to transfer wealth, all part of Democrats' transformation to get more people dependent on government checks, much of it in the form of handouts. Your thoughts? We're becoming very binary. You can't be binary when it comes to the sexes. There's no longer two sexes. There's 57 genders. But we're super binary when we actually talk about economic issues. There's the mega rich and then there's the poor. The mega rich and the poor. I'll make a general observation too. There was virtually no talk about the economy in the Democrat debate. No talk at all. Instead, people are they were pursuing ideological purity. And so that means for Elizabeth Warren that you tax, quote unquote, the rich. I went through the arithmetic of this a couple of years ago. You can take it all from the wealthiest in the country, and it doesn't, and there's not enough for a vast seething underclass underneath. But increasingly, when you listen to Democrats, they talk about us in the same way as your average Latin American caudillo talks about us. There's the privileged elite, and they're all privileged elites, all pretending. Elizabeth Warren pretending to be a woman of color all her life. Joe Biden, who made in his first year, this again, I can't stand the dirty, rotten, stinking, corrupt nature of the federal racket. His first year after leaving the White House, he made over $15 million, which is more than he'd made in the previous two decades combined. His wife. Got $3 million for a book deal, for a book that doesn't come close, will never come close to earning out that $3 million advance. Why would you pay $3 million for a book by the wife of the vice president? You're out of your mind? The second lady isn't even a thing. I listen to these constitutional conservatives, so-called, The founders of this nation wouldn't recognize the second lady as a thing. Being married to the guy who happens to be vice president and goes to funerals of foreign dictators for 8 years isn't a thing. So you're not paying $3 million to Jill Biden, Dr. Jill Biden, a teacher in a community college, officially, because she's got a book that's going to earn $3 million in royalties and everyone's going to make a big pile of money from it. Joe Biden is selling himself and his missus to people on the basis that it, on the same basis that Bill and Hillary did in the interregnum between her stepping down as Secretary of State and running for president. Oh, you just have, we're just taking a 4-year time out and you give us lots of money because we're going to be in the Oval Office. Joe Biden, he tried to get S corporations, which is, for our non-American listeners, a form of corporate entity that's very easy for an individual to create, because you basically report it. Essentially, it gives you the tax advantages of a corporation while still being an individual. And Joe Biden objected to this when he was vice president, and he and Obama tried to get S corporations abolished. They didn't succeed. The first thing that happens when he leaves the vice presidency is he and the quote-unquote second lady set up their own S corporations to sluice in. It's almost as if they knew that suddenly $15 million in DOSH would be descending on them in small bills and drowning all the money they'd made in the previous 20 years. So we have increasingly corrupt political class, bloated plutocrats presenting themselves as tribunes of the masses and actually increasing the number of downtrodden masses, not saying to people, hey, look, I made 15 million. My wife got $3 million for a book no one wants to read. Maybe that could happen to you and you could move into the middle classes. No, they don't say like that. They say, we're rich. You are poor so that we can be mega rich. That's essentially the message of the Democrats. Ray Winchester writes, hi, Mark. Do you think judges should be elected? We've had judges over here say that Boris Johnson was wrong to prorogue Parliament. It now has to go to the Supreme Court. So far, English and Northern Irish judges say it is a political matter and not for them. The Scottish judges, all installed by the Ramona Scottish Nationalist Party, said it was illegal. So are judges more political or less if elected, or are they better judges? Are they elected in the US because they are fair or just purely political? I am not in favour, generally speaking, of elected judges. And that's just actually from my experience in the Carrie Katz's suit against me for defamation in Nevada, where they elect judges. I'm not in favour of elected judges. I'm in favour of judges who judge matters of law. I'm not in favour of replacing the divine right of kings with the divine right of 9 judges, which is what America at the federal level has dwindled down to in large part. Nancy Pelosi, I think, in fact, actually compared the 9 judges on the Supreme Court with Moses and the 10 Commandments. In practice, it means that, you know, 5 judges. And in practice, that means that one judge, the designated swinger, whether it was Sandra Day O'Connor or Anthony Kennedy, now John Roberts, the so-called rock-ribbed conservative Bush appointee, sees himself as the designated swinger. There are political arguments. Political arguments are left to the people and their representatives. And in the case of, just for non-residents of the United Kingdom, Ray's point is that the minute Boris, or to be constitutionally correct, the minute the Queen prorogued Parliament, Boris's political enemies went to court to get the prorogation, which is the suspension of Parliament, declared illegal. There are essentially three jurisdictions in the United Kingdom. There's Scotland, which is one jurisdiction, Northern Ireland, which is the second, and England and Wales, which is the third, because there's the separate Scottish legal system, there's a separate Northern Irish legal system, but there's no separate Welsh legal system. I don't know why. They're all crazy these days, so the Welsh ought to have a piece of the craziness too. But in England and Northern Ireland, the courts ruled that there was nothing incorrectly, in my view, that there was nothing improper in the prorogation. The Scottish Court of Session initially supported the Anglo-Ulster view of the legalities, but they then went for an instant appeal, and the appellate judges at the Scottish Court of Session decided that Boris's prorogation of Parliament, or in effect the Queen's prorogation of Parliament, because that's basically an exercise of the royal prerogative, was illegal. So now it's got to go to this Blairite Supreme Court. We've trashed Tony Blair already today. One of the many malign aspects of his legacy is that he introduced a US-style constitutional court, a so-called Supreme Court, which was set up during the course of the Blair ministry, and I think is actually a bad business. I don't believe in... it's happened... So just to go back to your question, Ray, we had this in Canada in the early 1980s when Mr. Trudeau got his Charter of Rights and Freedoms made part of the Canadian Constitution, and Canada's Supreme Court became something closer to an American-style Supreme Court, in which questions that I think are better left to the people and their parliaments suddenly become decided by judges. For example, same-sex marriage was decided by the Canadian Supreme Court some years before it was decided by the US Supreme Court. And I really dislike judges as legislators. And it's gotten worse. It's gotten out of control in the US, where you have district court judges. A single rinky-dink little district court judge somewhere in the Ninth Circuit can strike down national immigration policy made by the executive branch of the United States, whose president and vice president are duly elected. That's rubbish, garbage, an affront to responsible government. That same infection has spread north of the border to Canada. It's spread to Australia. And in these recent legal manoeuvres in the UK, it has spread, if not yet to England and Northern Ireland, it has certainly spread to Scotland. And God rot those Scottish judges. It's naked political interference in both the royal prerogative and the executive authority. And I hope that this joke Supreme Court, which again is full of Ramonas, will act. And I don't even know why in the English context one should know how a judge feels about Brexit. That would have been anathema a century ago. But at any rate, I hope this Blairite Supreme Court takes the Anglo-Ulster view of this matter, Ray, rather than the Scottish view. Alman from CA, by which he means California, not the Dominion of Canada. Alman writes, "Hi, Mark, welcome back. We weren't really away. While we were on the cruise, we were posting up a storm. We had new signposts. We had new Mark's mailboxes. We had daily episodes of Climate Change, The Facts, which last episode, the final installment, coming tomorrow, Saturday morning, round about midday Eastern time. That's 4 p.m. GMT, if you want to work it out from there. So we didn't just close this. It's not like when you go to your favorite French boulangerie in Provence in August and find they've gone to the beach for 2 weeks. It's not like that. We were We were posting up a storm. Al Mann from CA says, welcome back out here in Cali. Sanctuary cities are refusing to enforce basic laws pertaining to drugs, pooping in streets and on sidewalks, mentally ill behaviour, etc. Mentally ill. Not mentally ill. That's like Hillary agreeing to be part of her own performance art exhibit. Mentally ill behaviours, etc. At the same time, they are welcoming an illegal replacement population. What the hell is going to happen? Every policy on the left, for the left, is mutually exclusive. So, for example, if you claim to think, if you genuinely believe, as AOC does, that the world is going to end in 12 years because of global warming, you would not be in favour of open borders, because open borders mean that people who have a Somali-sized carbon footprint move to the Western world and have an America-sized carbon footprint, which is 60 times the size of a Somali carbon footprint. So environmentalism and open borders are incompatible. Open borders and women's rights are, in a broad sense, incompatible, because you, as we've seen, you have a lot more sex-selective abortion, for example. So a lot, all the girls get aborted in certain communities. You impose, if you transform neighbourhoods through open borders, you will wind up with the situation that you have in large parts of France, where it's dangerous for a woman, a French woman, to walk about uncovered. That is the essence of, so as I said, environmentalism and open borders are incompatible. You see that on the streets of these sanctuary cities. I cannot get over. I first went to California, I think, well, I was 18 or 19, and it really was the Golden State then. And you think, oh my God, what a dream it would be to one day move to California, to live in California. The cities were gleaming, the suburbs were beautiful. San Francisco, I thought, was one of the most beautiful cities I'd ever seen when I was 18. It's like one large toilet now. It smells. It's disgusting. You begin to understand why I'm told that the police officers walk around with the surgical masks on because the wood smoke from the burning forest fires in Northern California. But I can tell you, as someone who got a whiff of various parts of so-called Nob Hill, that you could just as well argue for wearing the surgical mask just because of the smell, the increasing smell of large. Now then you have with that, what comes with that? Well, you get disease. So it's not just that there's this, you mentioned the pooping in streets. Basically, health, so-called healthcare, is 90% of healthcare is basic hygiene. And I've talked about this before, the expression getting the wrong end of the stick, which dates from when Romans used to evacuate themselves in communal latrines. I won't go into any more great detail about that. But my point is that 90% of healthcare is basic hygiene. If you have hygienic societies, you're on the course to, broadly speaking, healthy societies. So if you undo the work of centuries, so that now in Californian cities, one of the wealthiest jurisdictions on the planet, and one of the, as they always say, if it was a nation, California would be the whatever biggest economy in the world. And you have cities that are increasingly like third world cities, where, as you can read in Tucker Carlson's book, a guy picks up a flesh-eating disease just from walking through one of these tent cities where there's fecal matter everywhere and disease runs rampant. Because again, Democrat protestations about universal health care are irrelevant if you're making your city sicker and more diseased and more filthy. We are going to see the returns of all kinds of diseases that we thought were eradicated from the advanced world with what is happening in California. It's a joke. It's terrible, terrible thing. John Wilson writes, in a move that surprised even Mark Stein, the British courts told Boris Johnson it's illegal for him, or was it the Queen, to prorogue Parliament? Are the British courts activists like those in America? What powers does the PM have in UK government? What are Boris's chances of getting Brexit by October the 31st? Well, I won't say any more about the courts because I said that. And I actually think the intrusion on the royal prerogative by this Scottish court is an abomination. It was interesting to me when Conrad Black, who's coming on next year's Mark Stein cruise and was recently pardoned by President Trump, when Conrad Black, basically Tony Blair recommended him for a peerage, and Jean Chrétien, the Canadian Prime Minister, vetoed it. And when the Queen, the practice is that when the Queen receives contradictory advice from different prime ministers, that the status quo ante remains. So in this case, one guy had said, one prime minister, Tony Blair, her UK prime minister had said, let's ennoble Conrad Black. And her Canadian prime minister had said, let's not ennoble Conrad Black. So Conrad Black remained unennobled at that point, because that's the status quo ante. So Conrad was unhappy about this, and he went to court in Ontario to sue. And the court ruled that in accepting Monsieur Chrétien's advice, the Queen was exercising the royal prerogative in right of Canada, and the courts could not intrude on that. Now, I know all this sounds like a lot of mumbo-jumbo to our American listeners, but here's the point. You can make an argument for a Republican constitution, you can make an argument for a constitutional monarchy, but there are very few arguments to be made about rule by judges. Rule by judges necessarily delivers the country into the hands of the powerful. Who do you think become judges? Do you think the guy in the double wide down the rusting double wide down the street with the above the ground swimming pool, do you think he gets to become a big shot judge on the High Court in wherever, or the Supreme Court in the US, or the Supreme Court in Canada, wherever it is? No. It's powerful people. The richest, most powerful people are the ones who go to law school. That's not like going to, getting a loan from a college loan corporation and going to no-name Payless Shoe Source College and doing a four-year course in transgender and colonialism studies. You go to a law school, you're going to a serious elite institution. And they're called serious elite institutions because serious elite people get into them. So if you have rule by judges, which is an American development that has spread to other parts of the world, essentially you're having rule by the powerful, by the rich and the powerful. Not just because it's the powerful who get to become judges and fancy pants lawyers, but also it's because it's the powerful who can afford to go to court. So don't warm me up too much on the on the judge. What powers does the PM have in UK government? Right now, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom has no power other than his own will. The reason being, he doesn't have a majority in Parliament because certain people have defected. He has, I forget how many Tory MPs are left. Then he has the Democratic Unionist Party from Northern Ireland who vote with him on these Brexit-related issues. But He's lost his majority. He doesn't have enough Conservative MPs, and the number of Conservative MPs he has is shrinking faster. And John Bercow, this appalling, hideous, revolting Speaker of the House of Commons at Westminster, bent the rules allowing the non-government parties, the opposition parties, to take control of the House of Commons and the legislative agenda. So an alliance of Labour, the Liberal Democrats, the Scottish Nationalists, And these Remainer Tories has in fact seized control of the executive branch. Boris Johnson has a zombie executive branch. The legislators have seized control of the executive branch and have passed laws that they're demanding he implement, such as going to Brussels and asking for a further delay in Britain's departure from the European Union. Boris has said he would rather die in a ditch than do that. I don't know whether he means that. But if he doesn't take Britain out on October the 31st, he and the Tory party are dead in the election that will be coming in November. So in, this disgraceful speaker, John Bercow, has already said he is going to be quote-unquote creative if Boris, if the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, if the Queen's First Minister refuses to do what John Bercow says. And John Bercow has just given a speech comparing Boris to a bank robber, by the way. Bercow is going to be quote-unquote creative in how he responds to Boris's actions. Partial speakers. He's basically not the Speaker of the House of Commons, but the Speaker of Remain MPs. He's the Speaker for Remainers. Once upon a time, it used to be, we don't have in Commonwealth countries the politicized Speaker that you have in the House of Representatives in Washington. So they have the same title, but they're completely different things. The Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, or Paul Ryan, or whoever it is a partisan figure in the House of Representatives, whose job is not to preside over the chamber as the moderator, more or less, but to advance the party's agenda. In the Westminster system, it's supposed to be different. The Speaker is supposed to be an impartial figure. That's why famous speakers in the House of Commons, they tend to be elderly politicians who are respected on both sides of the House and whose political ambitions to be Foreign Secretary or Lord Chancellor or whatever are behind them, and so they're respected on both sides of the House and they serve as Speaker. We've now monkeyed with that. While I'm trashing speakers, Andrew Scheer, who was Speaker of the House of Commons in Canada, far too young, in his 30s, I think, having become an impartial post-partisan figure, should never have then run again for a partisan office such as leader of the Canadian Conservative Party. I mean, he's turned out to be completely useless as the Conservative Party leader, and my feelings on him are well known. But I object to the idea of a speaker then running for leadership of a partisan political force. Again, that's the trashing of tradition. And the trashing of tradition is not what real conservatives do. Quinn Watson writes, Mark, being that you and many from the Mark Stein Club just finished your Alaska cruise, I think the question those of us who weren't able to attend really want to know is this: can you see Russia from there? Yes, we could see Russia from our ship, as Sarah Palin never quite said. But seriously, almost everything said on the Democrat debate stage last night was far more absurd than anything ever uttered by Sarah Palin. Quinn Watson from Kansas City. You're right, Quinn. I would just like to know why it is that remark. For example, again, it goes, that was a remark made by, what's her name, Tina Fey on Saturday Night Live about, she put those words in Sarah Palin's mouth. There's a lot of Alaska that you can actually see Russia from. It's not an absurd comment, and in fact, it conditions your view of the where you are on the map. Actually, conditions how you think about these things. That's certainly true if you live in Western Alaska and are looking across the Bering Straits at Russia, because you're round the other end of the map, where the so-called left side and right side of the map actually meet. Because the map of the world generally shows Greenwich Mean Time running through the Greenwich Meridian in the middle, and then the Western Hemisphere and the Eastern Hemisphere either side of that. And that's not how you look at it if you happen to live in Alaska, as many of you will know from talking to people on the cruise. But this, again, this is snobbery. The objection to certain... the class, Tucker made this point on his show a couple of weeks ago, that a lot of the things we talk about actually boil down to class. The race discussion, a lot of the identity politics discussion is actually is there to obscure the fact that we're class-bound in the United States in a way that America never has been. Where you start in life determines more and more where you end up, so that there's less, on most of the indicators, there's less social mobility now than there is in those old European countries that people came to America to leave behind because there was more social mobility in America. Where you're born, how you're born, the circumstances you're born into, whether you have a father present in the home, whether you know who your father is, or whether you're in an entirely dysfunctional environment with a single mother and a rotating cast of passing boyfriends, whether you then... These things actually determine more and more. From the minute you're in the maternity ward, it gets easier and easier to predict how you're going to do in life. And when you... Occasionally you get a glimpse of that. Sarah Palin was mocked because she'd been to colleges nobody had ever heard of. And we have had rule essentially since Reagan left office by a Harvard-Yale elite who go, I think Bush went, was Bush the Harvard man and Clinton the Yale guy and then... Bush, you know, whichever way it was, that's absolutely, and even more so with the cabinet officials. The higher and higher proportion of important American officials, the people who govern Americans' lives from Washington, come from a narrower and narrower sliver of American society, and when someone outside that, whether it's a Sarah Palin or a Trump comes along, and they don't come from that background, they're mocked for not coming from it. It's a class thing. And the reason the left goes on about identity politics is basically because they don't want you to know that they're just snobs. Cross-border gal, Abby Bernard Rocher. I don't know whether it's Abby Bernard Rocher or whether it's Herbie and Bernard Rochet. I should have asked because at one point I was staring at Bernard's lanyard, his name tag, and wondering whether it was Roche or whether it had been anglicized in its pronunciation. But from Main Island, British Columbia, writes, hello, Mark. During the Q&A portion of the Climate Apocalypse show on last week's Alaska Cruise, my husband asked what was happening with Dr. William Happer and the Presidential Council on Climate Security had been tapped ahead. Ross McKittrick's answer was that members of the Trump administration had resisted the formation of that council and they had chickened out. Well, the efforts of the resistance have paid off. Dr. Happer has resigned. And without the voice of a serious scientific body that the PCCS would have been, the claims of the alarmists will remain unanswered and allowed to spread. We find this development extremely distressing. What is your take on it? This was a good idea of the president's. The creation of a Presidential Council on Climate Security. All presidents do this as a workaround for the generally sclerotic nature of American bureaucracy. It's very hard, actually, to transform the bureaucracies in Washington, and it's often easier to find a workaround. And the left do this. Obama does it by, you know, having presidential councils on for girls and women. I think he had one of those. They do it for things that are their interest. In this case, the great problem with the Trump administration is there's Trump and the administration. So it's not like a Trump administration is Trump and his administration working together. Here you have Trump on one side of the room and you have the administration on another side of the room. And whenever Trump tries to be Trumpy, the permanent bureaucracy and the conventional wisdom guys, and you can define that how you want. It certainly included Paul Ryan's House of Representatives. Paul Ryan squandered the first 2 years of the Trump administration. Disgracefully, he worked to subvert, I believe, he worked to subvert the president's agenda because he didn't agree with the president's agenda. What he did do, though, and actually he didn't want the president elected. He basically, on that conference call that came out after the so-called the grabbing tape, he basically said he wasn't going to lift a finger for Trump. He told big-time donors he wasn't going to lift a finger for Trump. He was just going to, you know. So he wasn't. He wanted Trump to lose, Paul Ryan. And the day after the election, the Republican establishment then thought to start. They didn't realize. It had never occurred to them that Trump was going to be president. But the advantage to them is that he was going to be a nominally Republican president. And so they staffed the administration full of Republican establishment figures so that the president finds himself sitting in rooms where people don't support his agenda. We know what he thinks of climate change. We know he didn't bother to attend. There was supposed to be a workshop on combating rising oceans at the G7 to teach Angela Merkel how to lower the ocean, to teach Emmanuel Macron how to lower the ocean, to teach Justin Trudeau how to lower the ocean. And Trump skipped out on that because Trump didn't want to learn how to lower the ocean because he thinks it's all hooey. And he should have had, he had the right to have a presidential council on climate security or on anything else. But again, in an American context, it's baffling to me because to go back to that question we asked, what are the powers of the prime minister? The prime minister is no more than primus inter pares, first among equals. There are a couple of dozen people sitting around the cabinet table, and in theory, they are all equal to you. And you are no more than primus inter pares, the first among equals, the Queen's first minister. That's all. That's all. You've got to persuade those people round the cabinet table to agree a position that you can then try and get voted on in Parliament. This is completely different. The president is the chief executive, and he has the right to be surrounded by people who will implement his policies. His policies. He's not a prime minister. He's the chief executive, and he has the right to people around him who will implement his policies. And the example of what happened to Will Happer, who's a very brave man, courageous man. I saw that for myself when we testified in the Senate together. Will Happer would have been a great asset to this administration, far more so than the conventional wisdom types at the EPA and all the rest of it. I'll take one quick question before we go, because I rather like the way this is phrased. Toby Pilling says, if the Brexit referendum result is overturned, would I be within my rights to deny the legitimacy of any election in the UK that I do not personally agree with? I think if Brexit does not happen, here's what's going to happen. October, if Boris doesn't leave on October 31st, he and the Tories are likely to be decimated by Nigel Farage's Brexit party in the ensuing election. That will likely mean some sort of Jeremy Corbyn, Liberal Democrat coalition takes power in London, and Brexit will never happen because the Liberal Democrats will demand before joining the Corbyn coalition is that Brexit is basically taken off the table. They'll just say, well, we tried, we gave it our best shot, we couldn't really make it happen, we kept tugging and tugging at the door, at the door marked exit, but we couldn't quite get it to open, so it's gone, it's off. And that will do the most damage to any kind of self-government, responsible government, democracy in the United Kingdom, because this was a great straight-up, straight-down democratic exercise. More people voted to leave the European Union than have ever voted for anything in the UK. So if they don't leave the European Union, then that will not just... The Europhiles will be delirious, the Remainers will be delirious, but the people's contempt for their institutions will be total. They don't, you know, to go back to George Orwell, there is no turbulence left in England, as he put it, after attending a miners' meeting where the miners couldn't quite rouse themselves to rise up against state power. When he said there's no turbulence left in England, there is no turbulence left in England, Scotland, Northern Ireland, Wales, sufficient to plunge the country into any kind of civil turbulence, serious civil turbulence. But the corrosion of people's faith in self-government will have been irreparably damaged, and bad things. It's never a good thing to tell the people you cannot vote for what you want. Well, I'll end with this thought. Northern Ireland. I'm rambling on this, but with Northern Ireland, they used to keep going on about the bullet and the ballot box, and every time there was an explosion, they would. The government would say, by the IRA or whoever it was, the government would say, we totally reject those who seek to change policy through the bullet rather than the ballot box. And this whole jingly thing, bullet, ballot, ballot, bullet, became a rather tiresome refrain during all the years of the Irish Troubles. Well, what are they telling the people right now? The people voted to change things through the ballot box, and the ruling classes are saying, okay, nice, it's nice to hear from you once in a while, but that doesn't work for us, so we're ignoring the ballot box. We're ignoring the ballot box. And whether or not that means people take up the bullet, as they did in Northern Ireland, or not, we know that that jingle no longer applies, that all those smarmy, smug Home Office ministers who said, we totally reject those who seek to change policy through the bullet rather than the ballot box, don't actually mean it. The British people voted for a change through the ballot box and you told them to stuff it. Nothing good will come from that. Thank you for all your questions. We've still got a ton of them. So we may have to do a video edition of Mark's Mailbox. Thank you all for your... I loved putting a face to some of the names of those who comment here regularly. We had a lot of cruisers who are very familiar names in the comment sections here. In fact, 60% of last year's cruisers came on this year's cruise, and I hope you enjoyed it because I think we got a little better at what we do, so I hope you'll want to come back again. We're going to be in the Mediterranean with Conrad Black, Douglas Murray, the great Douglas Murray, author of The Strange Death of Europe. He was, and you'll be able to see Douglas Murray live on this ship. He was supposed to be giving a speech about immigration to an immigration group in Washington a few weeks ago. And a few months ago, and he landed at the airport, and some wanker tosspot from the immigration bureaucracy prevented Douglas entering the country to give a speech on immigration. That they can do. Prosecuting Ilhan Omar for immigration fraud or not letting 30 million people walk across the Rio Grande. No chance of them doing that, but they can keep Douglas Murray out. You are jokes, and and this selective immigration policy is another part of what it means to be a land of men, not a land of laws. So up yours, guys. Douglas Murray, you can see him live in the flesh On our cruise for the strange death of Europe. We are going to try and arrange for the strange death of Europe to happen during our Mediterranean cruise. So we'll be on the ship and you'll be able to watch Marseille and Barcelona and Rome going up in flames as you're on the Lido deck enjoying a cocktail of an evening. That is it from us. I've been yakking far too long. We're now coming up to 10 past. I've run over by 10 minutes. So it's coming up to 10 past 5 Eastern Time. That's 10 past 9 Greenwich Mean Time. All our Aussies and Kiwis are up and about by now. But sorry, the show's over. We will deal with some of your subless questions on a video edition. And we will see you next time.